www.mediafree.tvpodcastnetwork.
Hello, everybody. This is Pizza With It. Beverly Pizza 9021 ZA. Today's episode is Season Pizza, Episode Pizza, Pizza Sun. No, it's Episode 14, Season 6, Fortune Sun. Here are your hosts, Tara Pizziano and Sarah D. Pizza.
Hello.
Hi.
That was my favorite opening clip I think we've had in a couple of seasons.
Such a non sequitur. I thought it would be fun. Sarah had pitched something else when it was in a different storyline, so I did my anal thing and overruled it, but also pizza. Hi.
Hi.
How are you, Sarah?
I'm fine. The alternate was you're embarrassing me and you're embarrassing yourself.
Which we already
also
have.
Also always true.
Dave, do we have site business?
Yeah, I'll do my derby thing again, because we don't have any, again, with this suggestions yet, as of airtime, but the first episode just went up, like, the first time I mentioned it just went up, like, you know, 24
yesterday,
hours ago, so we'll see.
Yes.
Previously, .tv/derby, make a donation to my nonprofit derby enterprise. Your money will be doubled thanks to the Hawaii Hotel Foundation for giving away money to charities local. I don't think that's her real name, but the gist is this. Three segment producer power prizes up for grabs. You get to dictate what I will do for a segment for either Extra Hot Great or this podcast, again with this. So if you want me to review a particular episode, if you want me to talk 5 minutes about the economics of giving away food at the Peach Pit, I don't know, whatever you want. You know, like, you figure it out, you tell me, I do it. So go to previously.tv/derby, make a donation there, and then don't forget to email me with your suggestion.
That's Dave. Is it correct that there is also a portal for all of the Previously.tv podcast network that users can access?
Yes, it is on iTunes. So if you search for Previously.tv, you'll see the ever-growing number of podcasts that we offer, including our latest edition coming in a couple days. It's Kim Reed's Little House on the Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Episode by episode, she's going to run through, and there's like 25 seasons. She's going to run through Little House on the Prairie in that most awesome thing I saw on TV last week style.
Yes, we have a bunch of new podcasts that we just launched and more to come. So it's very exciting time to be part of the Previously.tv podcast network listening family. Also, you can purchase an ad on this podcast. Go to previously.tv/ads, $50 for a personal message, $100 for a commercial message. And you can also buy t-shirts inspired by this podcast at glarkware.com, including Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know. And my personal current favorite, Pleasure Hut, as inspired by the bag from the episode a few episodes ago. That was a bad sentence. Moving on.
Anything Speaking to add of bad sentences, luncheon? Today's show.
Yeah. Nice segue. Okay. Starting with our sea story, Steve swims with sharks. So Rush apparently got Steve an internship at a talent agency with some sexy broad. Steve seems at first like he sucks, taking a call for his boss and actually trying to hand it straight to her without taking a message, rookie. And she hates him in clip number two.
Steve, I don't have time to juggle clients and a hard-to-train intern.
I'm sorry, I just thought you might be interested in taking a call from Jonathan Erwick, the new head of development at Paramount.
Erwick? Since when?
Since this morning. Front page. Shall I get him back on the phone?
No, I'll do it myself. Just do what I asked you to do and... Oh, and when you open my mail, be sure to open them neatly. I don't like my envelopes shredded.
Got it. What about your personal mail?
There's nothing personal.
No, God. Okay, first, she's even worse at her job than Steve is if she doesn't read the trades first thing in the morning. Duh. Also, for this, she's dried up her lady parts with no personal mail, a job she sucks at. The only thing worse than the stereotypical portrayal of a lady boss is this all too accurate glad-handing goon who is Rush's friend and got Steve the job in clip number three.
Stevie!
Hey, Scott!
I am so glad we got you aboard.
Me too.
You know, your dad and I walked 18 holes of Bel Air last week, and all he could do was twist my arm about hiring you. I think he even let me win.
Well, I hope I can live up to the advance billing.
Oh, you'll do fine.
I hope to.
And call my office. We should have lunch.
I will. See you later.
Mr. Coveney.
Yes?
I was wondering if I could put in to have Steve permanently assigned to me. He's terrific.
Sure. You can have him for as long as you like.
Thank you. Steve, why don't you get Jonathan Erwick on the phone?
Right away.
What? Also, who cares, but what?
Yeah. I kind of like when people call Steve Stevie. Sorry. I think it's sort of endearing and cute. But
he is kind of a Stevie, too.
He is. But now we also know that she's willing to sell herself out to kiss up to one of her boss's friends. Cool. Cool portrayal of a working woman. Later, Steve is still at his desk when a guy drops off some mail for this woman whose name is Tammy. One on top is marked personal and confidential. But as Tammy herself said, nothing is personal. So Steve opens it with a dumb, useless letter opener that is not fit for any office. This thing made me so mad. I took a picture of it, which is in the visual aids. So stupid.
It's one of those like little
giveaway.
I'll be providing a picture of my own letter opener, which is exactly like that one.
Oh, blue. No. I have one that's like a dagger because I used to have to use one of those at my old office, and it was like insufficient. I don't know. I'm anal about office supplies. Surprise.
Not you.
Uh-oh. She's being informed by letter that she's been fired. No, by the way, that's not how things go. But Steve is sad, but thinks fast and types out a new envelope to put the letter in to cover the fact that he knows. And then he gives her the bundle of mail, and we watch her take just that letter into her office, and Steve decides this is the moment he should go in and tell her he has to leave for this charity thing, which we will get to. And after he's gone, Tammy quietly freaks out. And later, Tammy finds Steve at said charity thing, which we will get to, and Claire tries to be pleasant when she finds out who Tammy is, but Tammy's not there to make friends. And Claire makes a hilarious whatever face at her, which you can see in the visual aids.
So good.
Gorgeous. When Tammy spots Steve, she asks to talk to him someplace quiet, and Claire makes yet another hilarious teeth-sucking face as they go by. And inside the peach pit, Tammy says she doesn't know what to do. Long story short, she wants Steve to use his connections to save her job and promises to take her with him on her way up the ladder, which, by the way, just got kicked off, so not much of a promise. But Steve offers to go and talk to this guy, Scott, first thing Monday. Tammy doesn't think she can make it through the weekend. Steve doesn't know where Scott lives, but Tammy knows he's still at the office. And since we know Steve can't resist a desperate blonde, he says he'll see what he can do. When he comes back into the casino, he tells Claire he has to leave for an hour on a mission of mercy, but won't say what. And Claire is snippy and suspicious. It's all stupid. This is like, seems like it's laying the groundwork for a fight, but it doesn't actually happen. Moving on, Steve proves he might actually be a great assistant as he strides into the office late at night looking for Scott. And he hasn't done more than say Tammy's name before Scott figures out that she sent Steve there. Steve denies it badly, and things immediately get inappropriate in clip number 4.
Are you sleeping with her, Stevie?
No. Of course not.
Well, neither am I. Though maybe if I was, it could have saved her a job. You see, she's a lousy agent. She's bright, she's artistically bent, but she has no commercial sense. And she's costing us clients.
Mm. Oh, boy.
Rules number 1 and 2. Never get emotional. It's not personal. It's business.
Yeah, but what should I tell her?
Well, if you've got any future in this town, you'll know what to say.
Are you sleeping with her, Stevie? I don't know. We just met 3 hours ago. Like, what?
I just don't. And what is this story even for?
Yeah.
Like, what is this supposed to do? I feel like this was supposed to be some kind of backdoor pilot situation, and then it just didn't happen. And also, who cares? Anyway, let's just get through it.
Indeed. So a beaming Steve makes it back to the peach pit where Tammy is waiting to show off his bullshit skills. As we know, they are considerable, as we hear in clip number 5.
There you go.
He thinks the world of you.
He does?
Yeah, big time. Really appreciates how smart you are. He admires your artistic bent.
I knew it had to be a mistake.
Actually, he thinks it's his mistake. He thinks he's doing you a disservice at the agency.
How so?
Well, how'd he put it? Feels that your potential is being stifled in the corporate environment. He thinks ITM is the wrong place for your talents. He doesn't want to hold you back another day.
I'm dead, aren't I?
Totally. I'm sorry, Tammy.
Don't be. You're gonna do great in this business, Steve. You sell a hell of a line. I know it was all a lie anyway, but it made me feel better.
What are you gonna do?
I could write a tell-all book.
My father told me a very interesting saying about this business.
What's that?
Be nice to people on your way up. You'll be seeing them on your way up again.
You got it. I'll see you on the way up.
No doubt.
Okay. Next.
And they never saw her again. Steve then finds
Hopefully
Claire.
Because she was taking an acting class. She's terrible.
Yeah, she's not good. And also, like, we now know, Steve doesn't even go into the entertainment business, so you're right. This is 100% pointless. But anyway, Steve then finds Claire, who won a shitload of chips at this charity thing, which we will get to, but declines to exchange them for prizes because she just did it to see if she could, and she is awesome. Finally, he's ready to tell Claire about how he had to fire his boss. Moving on! God. To our B-plot, a charity casino night ruins everyone's lives for the kids. So there's some kind of kids' charity event happening at the Peach Pit after dark, and Kelly is being a bitch about it in clip number 6.
Well, it looks like everything's come together.
Uh-huh.
That's all you have to say?
Uh-huh.
Well, how about thank you, Valerie, for letting Alpha House use the after dark for charity casino night.
Thank you, Valerie.
You know, that's what I like about you, Kelly. You're so polite.
She's letting you use her place. Why are you so like this all the time, Kelly? My God.
And also, since when do you give a shit about the Alpha House again? Fuck off.
No kidding. She was like all being artsy. And anyway, who cares? Brandon is dealing elsewhere with... Brandon is dealing practice blackjack for Claire and Steve. She gets blackjack, so she knew it, which I assume means we're about to learn that she can count cards because she's a genius. And Susan rolls up to compliment the decor, which she thinks looks like a real casino only because she's never been to Vegas, as they say. She wants to learn how to play the one with the dice. Brandon tells her to stick with him because he has a gambling problem. And in the Peach Pit, Brandon makes small talk about the casino, forcing Nat to ask casually if Brandon plans to play. As if Nat didn't bail him out once already, for which we never found out for sure that Brandon paid him back. Brandon tries to respond to this reasonable question with tone in clip 7.
Nat, it's strictly recreational. Besides, I learned my lesson. You don't see me laying any bets on football games this year, do you?
No.
Well, then relax. Believe me, I don't want to go through that again.
It's the worst.
Being actively busted for being a dick? That? Such a douche.
Yeah, you don't get to talk like that under the circumstances, buddy. Your tone should be more contrite in general, but especially here. But anyway,
yeah.
Go into a flashback, which we don't need to go through. Kelly is then doodling at a table when Colin comes in. She says she's avoiding work, of course, and shows him what she's been doing, which is a cartoony portrait of him as a dog. It's dumb. Speaking of portraits, she's volunteered a portrait by him as an auction prize. And I want it to just be like the Aaron ice cream drawing, no matter who wins it. Unfortunately, that's not what occurs. At home, Brandon, the fucking idiot, is trying to teach himself to count cards when Val comes home in clip 8.
Oh, there's an email on the counter from Jim and Cindy. They're not coming home for Christmas.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know you were looking forward to that.
Yeah, I miss those guys. Guess I'll have to drown my sorrows at the blackjack table.
Taking this a little seriously, aren't you?
Just lowering the house odds a little.
The house is for charity, Brandon. The idea is to lose.
Which is exactly what I'm going to be doing if you don't stop distracting me. Now get out of here.
Okay, two things. She's right. Like, this is just supposed to be for fun. You're not supposed to be trying to crack the system. You're not going to actual Vegas. That's A. B, this arc of Brandon being depressed about his parents' move is such a turdy plot line, and the way that they bring it up is so, like, afterthought-ish. Like, it's not convincing at all. He was never nice to his parents when they were there.
Yeah, and won't be in the next episode. Spoiler!
No kidding. So then it's that night at the casino. Susan wins, Brandon loses and is a bitch about it. But since Susan doesn't know about his gambling problem, capital G, capital P, she doesn't notice. But when Brandon goes to get more chips, Nat does in clip 9.
Hey, man, give me $100 worth of bucks.
Don't you mean another 100?
Nat, first you play my father, now my accountant. What's next, my priest?
If necessary.
Thanks, man. Look, we've been over this. I screwed up once, 3 years ago. Don't you think the statute of limitations has run out on that by now?
Let's say I do.
Fuck off. You're terrible. Yeah. So terrible. People are trying to help
butt
you.
Butt out, Nat. Like, just let him fall on his face. It's what we all deserve.
Well,
it's
yeah.
It's the future liberals want, okay?
It's true. And especially since you already tried to help him once. It clearly didn't work. You're no longer responsible for someone who's in his 20s. You were never responsible for him then either, but, like, now especially. Ugh. Anyway, yep. Brandon takes his chips to the craps table and wins and gets an obvious endorphin rush, which I have to say, Jason Priestley is decently good at making convincing. You can see in the visual aids because I made a GIF. Like, he does look, you know, weirdly alive in the eyes in a way that he doesn't at other times. Like, he doesn't usually seem like he's trying to act. And here he does an okay job, I thought.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, of course, it immediately curdles into cockishness, but that's Brandon for you.
Well, speaking of that, let's hear clip number 10.
Okay, give me the hard 10, high-low, horn bet, world bet, one for the boys in the yell.
Hey, Brandon, how much you got out there?
About a nickel on the inside. If you were smart, you'd come with me.
No, sir. I think I'll be playing the field.
Brave.
Nine.
Thank you.
No. Let that ride.
Are you crazy?
No.
Nat, will you please talk some sense into him?
I tried that already.
Yeah, you did, and look where I am now.
I am looking, and I don't like what I see.
And I suggest you turn around.
Ooh. I got a better idea.
Nat, what are you doing?
You're betting against me?
What are you doing?
Everything I got.
Let's go, Brandon.
Points 10, shooter, let him fly.
Seven out loud. Oh. Way there was no 10. Loser.
Happy now?
Oh, yeah. I'm very happy.
Good.
Ugh, terrible.
I mean, my favorite is the, like, background players being like, go, Brandon!
I know.
Like, it's a football game. Settle. Under 5, please.
Yeah, but also, like, of all of Brandon's failings, this one is somehow both the most infuriating and the most boring. I don't even know how that's possible.
Inboreating.
Exactly. So later, as Kelly takes the stage to do auction stuff, Brandon begs Susan for more cash, which she does not care to give him. Cue the fight in clip 11.
Wait, Brandon, I'm not going to pay you back?
No, I don't think you should gamble anymore tonight.
Well, thank you very much.
Catch you. You're sweating.
It's hot in here. Maybe they'll take a check.
You don't know when to quit.
And you don't know when to lay off.
Break up.
Seriously.
That's not tone.
This is what, I mean, whatever. We have to drag through the rest of this stupid story.
Mm-hmm.
And we know they don't break up. But it's like, he's already been so much more trouble than he's worth. Like, his fucking friend's wife gets murdered by her own father by accident. He's got a gambling problem. He's a dick about it. He's still in love with Kelly, who's a bitch about it. Like, you've been together for like a month. It's not worth it. Just go somewhere else.
Yes. And at this point, he's already like quasi cheated on her, which they only just got passed in the last episode. Like, enough. Anyway, speaking of Brandon being the worst, Kelly shuts down the gaming and calls Nat to the stage to be the night's auctioneer. And the first prize is a day with the Chancellor. Not even Claire can imagine who would want it. David figures there's at least one brown noser in a crowd like this. And they have a little like side look at each other. That's actually cute because it seems like the two actors just having an actual laugh, which I love because it was cute. At the cashier's cage, the opposite of cute, Brandon is fighting with the guy who won't sell him chips during the auction. Susan shows up to lead him away. He says he wants a chance to get even, and when she says he's embarrassing her and himself, he tries dropping Steve's name to the guy, and Susan finally catches her snap and leaves. Meanwhile, Nat is up to the Chancellor up to the chance for a portrait by Colin. And instead of having an example of Colin's portraiture, Nat is hilariously holding up a frame with your portrait here in it. Just probably more enticing than if he pointed to the stupid mural that's all around them that Colin did. But anyway, Kelly has bid $300 and thinks she's going to win until Val bids $400. This cues a bidding war that makes all their friends uncomfortable, particularly Colin, who tells Kelly not to outbid Val's $600 bid. And Kelly backs down and is a bitch about it in clip 12.
It's not worth it.
Well, I'll be the judge of that. What are you up to? Look, I don't have to explain anything to you. You could outbid me if it was important to you. Apparently it wasn't.
Oh, God. Jesus. Please welcome to the stage, Shed Tuzalat. Jesus, what is with these cues? That's a really weak burn, but because it worked, I'll allow it.
I know. God. Afterward, Val is still aglow about her win, but David isn't interested in joining her gloating because he's jealous of Colin. And then it's time for Brandon to eat a tiny amount of shit in clip 13.
You were right. I was out of line, and I'm sorry.
I got a problem. You better start taking it seriously. You're gonna lose something important to you.
I think I may have already done that.
And then he sulks for 20,000 hours while his hair looks like a stupid crop circle. I hate him.
Terrible. It's going to get worse, too. But then Val goes to the beach apartment to report to Kelly, the charity event organizer, as to how much money her charity raised. Kelly is
a bitch about it.
Yep, in clip 14.
If you're looking for Claire or Donna, they've both gone to bed.
Actually, I was looking for you. We got the totals tonight. After expenses, we made $11,000.
Well, that's good news. That you could have given me over the phone.
Well, I couldn't have apologized to you in person then.
And what exactly would you be apologizing for, Valerie?
I'm not exactly sure. David got so mad at me that I had to spoil the surprise and tell him that the portrait was his Christmas present.
His Christmas present? Well, then I guess I owe you an apology.
Forget it. The only thing you have to apologize for is bidding up the price. It cost me a small fortune.
Good.
I guess I owe you an apology is such a Kelly thing to say because it's not actually saying I'm sorry.
Yeah, which she never does. No. And then Val immediately backs down instead of being like, uh-huh, and I'm standing by for that apology.
Terrible. Meanwhile, Brandon is so concerned about having fucked things up with Susan that he's waited until the next day to go talk to her. This is how it starts, clip 15.
I hope there's a good reason for why you're here, because after the way you behaved last night, I'm not sure I even know you.
In some ways, you don't.
Oh, okay. And then he continues to loom over her to the extent that he tinily is able.
Mm-hmm.
And then she eventually lets him in, but there's a gif of this, like, does this full, like, from the neck up eye roll.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yes, obey that instinct. Mm-hmm. Kick him in the nuts, roll him out and down the hall to wherever the trash goes in your dorm, close the door, and get on with your glorious life.
That is unfortunately not what occurs. She asks him in and he tells her about his boring gambling problem. He thought he had it under control, but now he knows he doesn't. She says she would like to help him for some reason. And then they seriously sit there twiddling fingers for like 10 minutes. I made a gif of it that I had to do double time because otherwise it would be like a million whatevers. It would be too big because it lasts so long. Like, fucking cut. What is this?
And they like reinterlace their fingers again and then they cut to another angle. Like, this is not interesting.
No.
Cut.
This is not a big problem for you to get by. It was like one bad night, but whatever. There is still an A plot to get to, speaking of problems. But first, listener Sid writes that the day after Trump's inauguration, their family had to put their Boston Terrier to sleep. Ever since, Sid has been listening to again with this to distract herself.
To help her out with that, and to celebrate rescue pet parents everywhere, we are pleased to present the Roscoe Memorial Not Without a License Buddy Challenge. Namely, 5 reasons the gang should never ever be allowed to adopt pets.
Number one, they buy each other dogs as condolences about the deaths of other dogs, then dump the condolence dogs with their parents, Donna and Rocky too.
Number two, they, quote, free laboratory animals by just opening the cages and, like, putting them on the floor in the hallway of the lab building. At least drive that orange kitten to a hotel, Brenda.
Number three, they lash kittens to the backs of motorcycles in open carriers using bungee cords and string. Dylan, dooming trouble to death / PTSD.
Number four, they use thoroughbred horses as metaphors for money and sex. Shadowcaster.
Number five, they make horribly upsetting sounds that even cats couldn't sleep through. David's music. A braying.
Our own sensible condolences and best wishes to Sid and the rest of Roscoe's humans, and may you dream of Gordon Lightfoot Cole dragging teeny tiny Brandon Walsh down 14 flights of stairs and through the streets of Beverly Hills like tin cans tied to a honeymoon car.
Oh yeah, no problems. I can do that.
I knows.
And onto our A-plot, St. Donna saves South Central. Oh, God. Okay. Joe is dicking around in Donna's living room when she comes out in Lisa's uniform pinafore, capering around like it's a fun costume and she's starring in a play about poor people. Joe doesn't get why Donna has to be the one to cover Lisa's shift, but Donna says that Lisa has queen business and that the women of the royal court stick together. I would think Joe is asking why Donna, a person who I am sure has no idea how to make change, is covering instead of one of Lisa's qualified co-workers. He does not say that, though. Gravely, he does say he's going to drive her to the store the next day as if Donna doesn't have her own car. Apparently, it's because CU blew its chance at the Rose Bowl, so he has nothing else to do. So much for that peach pit discount that Nat was offering. Anyway, Joe is such a gentleman / class warrior that merely driving her isn't going to be enough, as we hear in clip 16.
How about me coming down there and hanging out with you at the store till you're done?
All day? No way.
Donna, it's not exactly the safest area.
Well, it's safe enough for Lisa.
Yeah, well, she's local.
What do you mean? It's okay for her to work there because she's black?
No. I'm just looking out for you.
I know. And I love you for it, but don't worry about me. I'll be fine.
Okay. Hing. Ugh. Also, she's local. Such a weird
I know.
Like, I was bracing for myself for what he was going to actually say and was like, oh, I guess at least it's not urban. I don't know.
I know. I totally thought it was going to be urban.
Okay, God. Then the storefront. Okay, I've been in some sketchy LA neighborhoods and none of them had fences with fucking razor wire on them. This is crazy. And if you think I'm joking, go to the visual aids, because I'm not. This is going to be Donna's home away from home for a shift. A little boy walks up to the cash with a teddy bear and asks how much it is. And she observes that he doesn't seem like the teddy bear type. He says it's her little brother's birthday. Donna finds the price, but the kid thinks $5 is too steep and goes to put it back. But at the improbable end cap stand of cute stuffies in this food desert supermarket / really a liquor store, he changes his mind, stuffs it in his shirt, and starts running for the door. The manager spots him and detains him, but Donna sticks up for the kid, claiming that he just paid her for it. And the kid plays along, and why not draft in her white lady privilege if she's going to use it for good? I don't blame him. The manager asks why the kid had it under his shirt, and the kid claims it so that the gangsters outside wouldn't steal it from him. I would say that gang seems kind of soft, but okay.
And kind of bored.
Yeah, maybe.
Ally with another gang that has more to do.
Yes. As the boy leaves, Donna feels free to tell the store manager that she's presumably known for about 2 hours that he's just a kid, and then, on the sly, takes the cash out of her wallet and puts it in the till, including the tax, which I'm so sure she can figure out in her head. Oh, St. Donna, pray for us. Then, later, Joe pulls up in his truck and heads inside to make sure Donna's not dead. JK, her shift is over. But also, the other thing a little, she says goodbye to Stan, the manager, who's in a much better mood, and thanks her for the shift. And outside, the teddy bear kid is waiting to tell us all more about himself so we can determine whether he's worth St. Donna's benevolence in clip 17.
I'm sorry about what happened before. Thanks for saving my butt. My name's Isaiah.
I'm Donna. This is Joe.
Hey.
How you doing?
Look, I've only got $3.
That's okay. You keep it.
You know, I never would steal anything. Except it's for my little brother's birthday.
I know. You told me.
No.
Come on, Donna. We gotta go.
Hey, really? I'm not a thief.
Well, from now on, make sure you can pay for something before you leave the store with them.
Cool.
Why it takes so long, like, it's to watch them drive away.
It's just so much gold directed, like, via cannon up Donna's ass. I just can't even.
Yeah. Well, there's more to come, so you're going to have to. Joe and Donna drive through the neighborhood. Donna is mostly curious about the places going by while Joe looks like he shit his pants 4 times already. She asks whether they haven't already been by that corner because this is before Apple Maps. Joe is sorry, but he hasn't been to this part of town before. Laughing, she suggests that he ask for directions. Fortunately, since he can't say it's that he's scared of black people, he can change the subject to the fact that they're about to run out of gas, which occurs immediately. He pulls over. Now even Donna looks terrified about getting out of the truck and walking in broad daylight through this residential neighborhood where children are playing. But anyway, when we cut back to them, these two jars of mayonnaise are walking fast while trying to calm each other down in clip 18.
Just relax. Act like you own the place. Everything's gonna be fine.
Oof.
Okay, Dad.
Also, own the place is problematic language, just saying. They get to a car a couple of guys are working on, and when one steps out into the sidewalk, Joe moves Donna to his other side and crosses the street. A car slows down so a guy in it can ask if they're looking for Rodeo Drive, which as a burn is about a C+. But Donna has a cheery reply that takes us into clip 19.
No, we're looking for a gas station.
Hop on in. We give you a ride.
No, thanks.
Hey, ain't nobody talking to you. Hey, now, is that your truck up the road there, Blondie? No, we'll take care of it for you.
Hey! Donna! Joe! You guys finally made it. I've been waiting on dinner.
Yeah, we ran out of gas.
Joe, I mean, what's wrong with you, man? Well, you can come up to my house, grab a bite to eat, and then my mama will take you guys to go get some gas.
Thanks, guys.
Too bad we couldn't be of any help.
Good thinking, kid.
Yeah, well, my mama didn't raise no dummy. You actually ran out of gas?
Yeah. Don't say anything about my mom.
I don't know if you can get away with that, Joe, actually.
No.
In this perfectly bright, well-appointed apartment, Isaiah's brother Benjamin is playing on a rocking horse while his sister Tanya eats peanut butter out of the jar, as we are all wont to do from time to time, but he's embarrassed and tells her to put it away. Joe and Donna are upset by this urban squalor slash perfectly nice apartment until Isaiah points Joe to the phone, leaving Donna to pry in clip 20.
So where's your mom?
She's at work. She'll be home later.
Yeah? How about your dad?
I don't have a dad.
So Donna's all stricken by this I don't have a dad talk, as if her best friend and roommate Kelly isn't in exactly the same situation, basically, and her other roommate doesn't have a mom, so whatever, but, you know, they're white, so it's different, question mark?
I guess. Also, it's not like they left a 5-year-old in charge.
Yeah. This kid is, like, like 14, maybe?
He's about to shave, so settle down.
That's true. He has a deeper voice than David, by the way, anyway.
Well, who doesn't?
True. Then Benjamin has to pee and Tanya breaks a glass and Donna decides they shouldn't leave because the kids aren't safe, but tries not to make it weird and fails in clip 21.
So what's for dinner?
What?
Dinner, you know, the meal you eat at the end of the day. You did invite us for dinner, didn't you?
Hey, I was just doing you guys a favor. And besides, I don't have enough for you guys. And I need you out of my house when my mother gets home because she'll have my butt for this.
For what?
Come on, now, don't play dumb. I mean, you see what's going on here, don't you? If the child welfare lady ever finds out she leaves us here alone, we'd be out of here.
Well, hey, we're not gonna tell anyone, are we?
Of course not.
Besides, we're the ones bringing for pizza.
Oh, hey.
Hello, what's your name?
I'm Donna, what's your name?
My name is Benjamin.
Benjamin, do you like pizza?
Yes.
Yes, well, that's what we're having for dinner.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Also, again, this kid is fully old enough to be babysitting, so I don't know what the issue is about them being left alone, other than that he left them alone to go buy the one kid a birthday present. But it's anyway, whatever.
And then just let strangers into the house.
He did.
But sure. Also, this one kid is like very obviously looking right off camera for like mom to prompt for the line.
Yeah.
Does it a couple of times in the middle of one line. Like, really? Los Angeles? No other kids who could say one line. Okay.
Well, yeah, apparently not. He's not as bad as Aaron, but he's not good. Later, Isaiah serves, which by the way, I feel like I should mention since we dragged her so bad in the last episode, that kid never acted again, including in any other episode of 90210 as Aaron. So obviously we weren't the only ones that thought she stank. Anyway, later.
And she grew up and became Jessica Stroop, who didn't know how to read scripts. So it's all a circle of something.
That's true. Later, Isaiah serves Benjamin a birthday cake, which his mom baked that morning. He also gives him his present, and Donna and Joe are proud of Isaiah for doing such a good job running the household in this hellish apotheosis of the capitalist system that grinds us all down and offers no safety net for the vulnerable. Whoops, did I say that Pinko stuff out loud again? We learn Isaiah's mom is also studying to be a nurse. Donna would like to meet her. Isaiah says she'll be home soon, whereupon he's going to get into trouble. But St. Donna is on it in clip 22. This is a long one because it gets real awkward. Here we go.
Well, why don't you get your brother and sister ready for bed, and Joe and I'll clean this up. And don't worry about your mom. I'll talk to her.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. You shouldn't be.
He really is incredible.
Yeah? He's got it all under control. We better get going. Donna, this isn't right, butting into their life.
Well, leaving them here alone isn't right either. Maybe their mother can do it, but I can't.
Who are you? What are you doing in my house?
Look, it's all right, Mrs. Hooker.
Who the hell are you people?
Your son helped us out. We ran out of gas.
Oh, I see. So what are you still doing here?
The kids were all alone, and, well, we bought them pizza.
I see. How much do I owe you for the pizza?
No, nothing. It was our pleasure.
No, I said, how much do I owe you?
Let's call it even for letting us use your phone.
Look. Isaiah is a remarkable boy.
That's right, he is.
He's 11.
He's more than capable.
Yes, I know that.
Look, I wear a beeper. Isaiah knows all of his neighbors. Look, I don't have to explain myself to you.
I'm sorry. But those kids were left here alone all day.
Oh. So what are you gonna do? Call social services, have them come in here and yank these kids away from their mother?
No, of course not.
You come in here and you judge me. You don't know me. You don't know my problems. Look, I'm asking you, please, leave us be. We're a family. We can take care of ourselves.
Benighted character of color,
yeah,
we'll never see again.
Yes,
thinking that she knows better about her own life and her own perfectly pleasant apartment than Donna, who has been there for 90 minutes.
Yeah,
it's just so revolting.
And again, the issue, as I said in my wind up, is like a system that does not allow for people to live their lives. Like, should this woman have access to safe and affordable daycare for her children? Of course. Is that what's going to get discussed in this episode? No.
No.
Like, these are two separate issues. Like, I mean, the real main issue is capitalism, which we're about to get to, in fact. Rolling up late to casino night, Donna is alive with her new consciousness of the inherent injustice of capitalism in clip 23.
BMW. Porsche. Cadillac.
Where I'm from, you hardly ever see cars like this. Rolls Royce cruising down Main Street. I don't think so.
We got it pretty good, don't we?
You bet we do.
Tonight was just sort of a reminder.
Yeah, but you can't feel guilty for what you have in life.
I know. I love my life. My life and you.
Good.
Blech.
You tell yourself you deserve it.
I know I deserve it.
No, you don't.
Does Isaiah deserve to lose his childhood?
Oh, who's to say that Isaiah's childhood experiences won't turn him into a great leader someday?
Yeah. Who's to say that it won't break him?
Oh, God. Okay.
And not for nothing, but during this entire scene, she's wearing this dark brown lipstick that is not in the lines, and it looks like she just hit herself in the face with an icing paddle full of double fudge frosting, which makes it even more difficult to keep your mind on her fucking asinine pronunciamentos about a childhood. Shut up!
Well, yes. I mean, I'm of two minds about this. First, Joe is, in a sense, right that Donna doesn't know how this is going to affect Isaiah going forward. Like, he has a mother that cares about him, obviously has her shit together enough to bake a cake for her child's birthday, like, before she left for her two full-time jobs, not even counting the full-time job that is having children. But also, the whole narrative of, like, maybe this will turn him into a great leader is like so barfy. And it's like all of those human interest stories where it's like, this guy walks 2 miles to work every day because he doesn't have a car. Like, these are not happy stories. They're awful. Like, again, the fact that there's no safety net for people that are in vulnerable positions is a problem and not one that is addressed by this episode, which is instead reducing everything to, like, you know, the handouts that you can give to this one family. Like, Donna is not Ellen DeGeneres. This is not going to solve systemic problems for anyone.
Well,
at all.
It's also a little bit like he might turn out to be a great leader someday.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like there's a little bit of, like, not privilege exactly, but that there are paths for people of color who have to babysit their younger siblings when there's, you know, only one parent on the scene. Mm-hmm. And what was the other option, Joe? NBA star? Rapper? Like, there's just something weird about that. That's like, why can't he grow up to be an accountant or a fucking no account blogger like myself? I mean, I don't know. It just felt sort of not like dog whistly, but do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That it's like people of color have two options.
Right.
So, yeah. Shut up, Joe, is my point.
Yeah, let's wrap this up. This is so painful. So Lisa is at casino night and has been worried that Donna was late. So Donna takes her aside to tell her all about Isaiah's life as a latchkey kid, which she just learned about in clip 24.
Look, this kid is doing all he can to keep it together for his family. I just feel like I need to do something.
In case you didn't know, this is not Adopt a Black Family Month.
So what does that mean? It's not politically correct to try to help them?
No, what I'm saying is I don't think it's right for you to butt in on someone else's business.
Lisa, these kids were left home alone, unsupervised.
But they're not your kids, Donna.
I know that.
And you can't save everybody.
I don't want to save everybody. I want to help them. And if I can't, if I don't, then I sure as hell don't belong in this Rose Court. I mean, what's the theme that we've been talking about since day one? Kids, laughter, and dreams. Is that real or all just a bunch of bull?
No,
And what's this supposed to be about tonight? Supporting kid care and all the child relief agencies? I mean, somewhere between the two of them, there has got to be a way to help this family.
St. Donna.
All this those times I was saying it as a joke and then the show actually made the subtext text. Unbelievable.
And the family is fine.
The family's
fine. It's a fucking two bedroom. The lights are on. She's making her rent. Yes. It's not great.
But
so what?
She's fine. Yeah. Ridiculous. Then St. Donna goes to a playground to meet Isaiah's mother and apologize for getting into her business. She explains that her sorority raised money for this facility and that she knows the people there and she can get the kids into the daycare. She wouldn't do it without Isaiah's mom's permission. Of course, mom does not want handouts. Donna says it's not charity. She's offering to help out of friendship. And the mom watches the kids enjoying the playground and admits that we all need a little help in life sometimes, and she's not too proud to take it. Thank you, St. Donna, but seriously, thank you. That is nice. And childcare in this country is a sin. Donna tells Isaiah that she's happy she met him. Isaiah knows that he owes her a lot more than $5 now, but Donna says he can pay her back by doing the same thing for someone else. When he grows up, he promises he will, and there are hugs. End of episode.
Barf. I have nothing else to say. Just, we've covered it.
Yep.
Shut up, show.
Indeed. Let's wrap it up officially with the most valuable player. I'm going to say Isaiah getting shit done. he cleaned up a broken glass.
Mrs. Holcomb,
that's more I did. Sorry.
I'm going to go with Isaiah's mom, who, granted, I wish she had fished a Louisville Slugger out from under the couch and been like, get the fuck out of my house. Here's $20 for the pizza. Beat it.
Mm-hmm.
But she was still pretty cool. So
she was
her.
And she had a beeper. She was right on top of it. Based on modern technology. All right. Least valuable player. Oh. As irritating as Donna was, she was at least trying to do a nice thing for someone, which makes the least valuable player Brandon.
I agree. Kelly made a horse race out of it, but definitely shelf head.
And now it's time to go to our user suggestions for what we should replace the Kim challenge with. And today it comes from Twitter user Jeff Rundell, who suggests, what, if anything, in the episode was better than Val's breasts? Susan's full body eye roll was better than Val's breasts, I guess.
Yeah, she didn't stick the landing. Kelly having to eat shit was almost better than Val's breasts, but then she didn't eat shit and Val didn't make her.
Claire's several eye rolls about Tammy, Steve's boss, were enjoyable. More enjoyable to me even than Val's breasts.
And Lisa's Adopt a Black Family Month burn was fairly sick, almost as sick as Val's breasts.
I got the last answer.
That's about it.
Oh, yes?
Yeah.
Dave?
Pizza.
I guess in general, yes, pizza is better than Val's breasts in terms of what it can do for us on a day-to-day basis.
And the likelihood of my personally getting to bury my face in a pizza is way better than getting to bury them in Val's breasts.
That makes five.
All right.
Pizza.
That's your loop.
Val's breasts. Val's breasts. Next time on Again With This, Colin all of a sudden can't go an hour without doing cocaine, which really is the only sensible response to an episode that features Brandon giving his mother's mullet marital advice. You'll need an anti-emetic script from your own Dr. Feelgood when you get a load of our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other Again With This episode on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv and this very podcast at AWT90210. I'm email on the counter Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano, stolen teddy bear Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is problematic pizza David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Pizza, 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 pizza,
pizza, pizza, pizza, pizza.